Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This November, the Pleasure Chest is holding their sexiest sale of the year. If you've been a longtime Wire People Into That listener, you know that holiday shopping drives me bananas, and I do everything I can to avoid it. But I'm really happy to be sponsored by the Pleasure Chest because I truly think if there's one thing to get you through the stress of this season, it's saving money on the things that bring you real joy, like vibrators. Starting Wednesday, November 27th and running through Monday, December 2nd, you can get 20% off anything on PleasureChest.com. That's dildos, butt plugs, books, DVDs, lube, kink gear, and so much more of the best pleasure products out there. Plus, all Fun Factory toys will be 25% off during that stretch. And you get free shipping if you place your order on Cyber Monday. Remember, that's Monday, December 2nd. And don't forget, as always, the Pleasure Chest's weekly Pleasure Ed workshops are free and open to adults 18 and older of all genders, sexual orientations, and relationship statuses. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram and Twitter for up-to-the-minute info on their free weekly workshops in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago. There's workshops on hand sex, double penetration, threesomes, and so much more. Fall in lust this autumn with the Pleasure Chest. And now, on with the show. Christine, hello.
Hello.
Christine, aka Demonum X.
Correct.
I'm totally saying it. I think I've said this to you before. I'm saying it like Demona, the female villain from the television show Gargoyles. Did we have this conversation?
No, but I love that.
Oh, yeah. Which I feel like is a name based on Desdemona, but also,
oh, yeah,
like a lady demon, mm-hmm, name.
Yeah.
Do you identify as a lady demon, Christine?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We tell everyone just like about your whole outfit is so casually appropriate for this podcast.
So I wore my favorite Catholic shirt, which says Saddam today, Gomorrah the world. It's from a queer company out of Philly called Come On Strong. They make that Eileen Wuornos t-shirt as well that everyone has.
When Andrea Glick was on the show, she was wearing that I'm with her,
yes,
Eileen Wuornos shirt. Her. So this is the second appearance,
yeah,
by, what is the name of the company?
Come On Strong.
By Come On Strong on this podcast. Yes. Unfortunately, wearing a shirt on a podcast is not maybe the best way to promote the shirt, although I have called attention to their shirts both times,
yes,
that the interviewee has been wearing it. So anyway, great shirt.
And I also have on a faux leather pencil skirt and knee-high boots.
Are they faux leather?
They are. I'm a vegan.
I actually don't think I realized that.
Yeah. Maybe I'm a vegan leather daddy.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
We exist.
Demonum X is a femme leather dyke and lifestyle dominant. She believes in BDSM as a form of spirituality and specializes in rope bondage and blood play. She is the founder and editrix of Fist, an anthology zine for leather dykes, as well as Linked, a polyamory zine, which is totally right here on my table. More of her words on BDSM and power exchange can be found in Them, Autostraddle, and Wussy Mag. Demonum X lives in Brooklyn, where she sometimes teaches and often performs. You can follow her on social media at DAEMONUMX and buy zines at fistzine.com. And she also goes by the name Christine. How's it going, Christine?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm so happy that you're here. We are going to talk about a subject that is so alien to me.
which is a fun challenge. We're going to talk about Catholicism and why people are into that. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about your work, because you do some really fucking cool and interesting stuff. So first of all, you are a zine maker in 2019. I want to know what it's like to be a zine maker, what inspired you to start making Fist Zine. You just had a release party for issue 4. You've also done Linked, the polyamory zine. Why zines?
So I started Fist in 2017, and I'm a huge history person when it comes to leather. More, actually, probably only leather. like leather and dyke history specifically. So a few years ago, I got really into reading all of the books. Mm. Like,
any recommendations?
I think my absolute favorite is probably Leather Folk.
So good. Right there on that shelf.
Yeah. You just have to have it.
That book really changed my life, actually.
It honestly, I get emotional just thinking about it.
Totally.
It's so great.
Actually, I'm about due for a reread.
Yeah.
That book. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of the, I guess when leather was becoming more popular in maybe the early 80s, there was lots of writing about it. Books and zines and more popular magazines.
On Our Backs
was the like glossy magazine. There were other zines that were produced more DIY, mm-hmm. like traditional zines. They're really hard to find, but I found some of them and was super inspired. And I was like, why is no one doing this anymore? Our lives are not totally different than the people who were writing these back in the 80s and 90s, but it would still be great to document them. And thinking about how I have, like, reading stories and perspectives of dykes from back then has really changed my life and inspired me. So I was like, hey, we're still here. Why did people stop making these? And I don't know really what the answer is. Maybe the internet is the answer.
Yeah, it's usually good to scapegoat.
Right.
The internet.
Totally. So I was like, let's bring it back.
People are still making them even though we have the internet, but there's less energy around distribution.
Yeah,
because those stories and that information is also being shared online.
Right.
So maybe things are happening in like smaller communities, but we're not as aware of it. But you weren't seeing it in your communities here in New York. Right.
It's an anthology, so I open for submissions, and then people submit to me, which I love to say. the running joke: submit. So, yeah, then I narrow it down and print. And the last, every zine gets, the first print run, 100% gets to go to charity.
Awesome.
And then the last issue 4, I actually was able to start paying contributors.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Can you define leather? What does leather mean to you? Tell us about your leather journey.
So, and this might be controversial. I feel like leather at its core is queer.
Mm.
And it's specifically like, it's really fucking gay. And I know that that's not necessarily the case today, but the history of leather is incredibly gay. But for me, it is the difference between having BDSM as a hobby and having BDSM as a lifestyle.
Or like part of your identity.
Right. Part of your identity. It's like, it's how you move through the world and it's always on your mind. You're always thinking about that aspect of who you are.
Yeah.
You have identity surrounding it, like labels or
honorifics.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, that's mostly the difference. It's like BDSM leveled up.
Yeah, and then also maybe like a need to create community and to signal to others about a participation in a culture, which could be a few people getting together or could be networking with larger cultures or being connected to history.
Right. Yeah. It has a lot to do with community as well. Yeah. I guess it would kind of hard to be a leather person, like outside of community.
Yeah.
That would be terrible.
Yeah, that would be rough. I mean, I guess there are plenty of people who want to have more solitude than others. I don't know. It's kind of amazing to imagine, like, solitary leather culture, like a leather hermit. Or like a leather mage on top, and like living in a cave on top of a mountain.
Yeah, that's really funny to think about. But it is like a lot of your, like, people will have families or houses, and a lot of your identity, even though it is very personal, it's in relation to others.
Mm,
so if you're,
I think that's true.
Yeah, if you're a dominant, you're always a dominant, but what fun is that if you don't have any submissives?
Totally.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for that. I feel like everybody has a different definition of leather, and a lot of people who have pledged their lives to it are really vague about putting it into words, which I think is fine. But as a wordy person, I'm very invested in trying to. I feel similarly about this podcast. This is not necessarily like a leather podcast, but leather culture and archiving and history and community and values like education and demystifying things and destigmatizing things is like a really big part of what this podcast is.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was fishing for that. It's like a zine, but it's like an audio zine. But
yeah, I've been listening to this podcast for a very long time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, well, welcome. How does it feel to be in the hot seat?
Oh, I'm honored. It's great. I can't wait. There have been a few episodes where I was like, oh my God, like that's, I want to talk, like, I want to be there in that conversation.
Oh,
know?
I love that.
Yeah. So this is great.
Oh, well, that makes me feel really good. I just asked you because you're cool. I forget that people listen sometimes. I'm just, do you like experience that with making zines where you're like churning it out and like doing, you know, we were just talking about your process and the printing and going to the post office and gathering submissions and editing and all that stuff. Do you like forget sometimes when people come up to you and they're like, I loved that story or that article? You're like, right.
Yes. Yeah. I was at a restaurant like a couple weeks ago, and I got a note on my receipt, like the server.
Hot.
Yeah. Was like, I love your zines. Here's 10% off.
Fuck yes.
I did not get a phone number, but I got that note and a discount. So,
I mean, I don't know. I'd take a discount over digits any day.
That's true. You're right. It's better. It's better this way.
What made you decide you were doing Fist, which is a combination of people's submissions are like fiction, but then sometimes they're like personal essays and all different comics, all different kinds of stuff. But then you made this, I have it right here.
Yay.
Linked. Oh, you should sign it for me.
Oh my God.
look at that pink highlighter.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, that makes
definitely
me so happy.
Let me see. Let me just randomly pick something that I highlighted, and we'll reveal something about me. Oh, yeah, this is a very me thing to highlight. For people in mixed privilege relationships, race, class, ability, gender, etc., if you are the person with more privilege, what are you doing to make your partner feel valued and secure and worthy?
Yes.
Well written.
Thank you.
Well highlighted. See, we collaborated. That's what community is all about.
Yes.
Well, that is just a taste of this awesome scene. What made you decide to write about polyamory?
Okay, so the shady answer is that I don't think that I have everything all figured out, but I think I do a pretty good job in relationships. I have been seeing all around me lots of people who are doing this incredibly messy, and by this I mean polyamory open relationships.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, how can I create something that's like an easy way for people to access this knowledge that I've learned from my own experience, from other people who've had the experience, and from reading lots and lots of different things about polyamory? So, yeah, I decided to make a zine because I was already making Fist. So,
yeah,
why not?
I think it's really good.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed reading it.
It's kind of like, it's definitely, I've heard people say that it's not a 101 resource because it kind of jumps a few ladder steps.
To be honest, that is maybe part of what I liked about it. I mean, listen, I love a 101 resource. I truly do. And like in my sex education, when I teach, in like my pedagogy of mm-hmm. like adult kink and sexual education workshops, like I got the advice really early on that establishing the fundamentals and the basics is a really good thing to do because you don't want to take for granted that what people know, but you're also sort of establishing like your style and your values by being like, here are the basic things that I feel about all of this, or like, here's how you would approach things if you were new. But a lot of poly stuff is like that.
Yes.
And so it was kind of nice to read something that is a little bit more like, yeah, you've had a lot of experience. One thing that really stuck out to me about the zine is at some point you say something that could not be more simple, which is that your partners also have feelings. Yes. Like, are people with feelings?
Yes.
And I was like, oh yeah. You know, because there's so much focus in polyamory on like in a good way on like you think about your own boundaries and you think about your own needs and you try to deprogram yourself with like, well, you know, I have this idea that society gave me and I'm having this emotional reaction, but like, what is the real thing that's going on for me? And then you're like thinking about the person that you're dating and like all of that stuff, but like then the people that they're, you know, you're not just trying to like protect your boundaries from that person, like they also have like feelings and needs. And even if you're, like, past the point that, like, they're not the enemy, right, they also, like, and you don't have to be friends.
Right.
Or fuck them to, like, acknowledge that they have their own needs and boundaries.
Yeah. And that's...
It was refreshing.
That's a thing, like, a lot of people get started out in polyamory when they're already coupled.
Right.
And so then it's kind of like us against the world. And especially right. if you're dealing with unlearning jealousy and possessiveness and,
yeah.
you know, like, you're mine forever and creating rules around what your partner, what you feel is... would make you the most comfortable that your partner's allowed to do with. And in that, there's a lot of collateral damage in the people that you are bringing into this mess. So it's important to remember, like, oh yeah, like I shouldn't try and control you because, oh, that's a person who also has feelings and like they deserve a say in this.
And they like the person that you like.
Right. You like the same person.
Yeah. And also, I guess it made me realize that there's so many layers to unlearn that even if you're like having sex with someone that isn't my partner or having a romance with someone that isn't my partner is not cheating because we're being ethical and we're communicating about it, there's maybe still a bias that person is like the other woman or the other person, you know, like the other person that is like coming in and being a disruptor.
Right.
And that they don't deserve the same consideration that you do.
Right.
And you just kind of like burst that bubble.
Yeah.
So that was really helpful.
Yay.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it.
Another thing that you do that is really extraordinary. You know, let me tell you a story. When I was getting turned out in the Bay Area, being a sex worker, being queer, being kinky, sort of coming into an understanding of what you were describing as leather, that like kink was not just like, oh, I should like to experiment a little bit, but like, no, this is like who I am and like what I'm about. And this is like 2008-ish in the Bay Area. There were people who did shibari and suspension and like elaborate bondage, like events and performances and happenings. Now, listen, I worked as a dominatrix, so I also like I learned a lot about bondage. I am a very underwhelming bondage top. It's true. I'm the first to admit it. I never could get the hang of it. But once someone's in bondage, I'll fuck them up. But I'd like to have somebody come in and blindfold them, have somebody else do the bondage. And anyway, so I was definitely like learning from a lot of women. But there were a lot of people in sort of the larger community that would like do events who were, I bet you can guess, cis, straight, white guys.
You don't say.
And
I don't believe it.
I'm not going to name any names. I bet some people listening to this are thinking of the people that I'm thinking of from this era. But a lot of them were unfortunately sleazebags. And I don't mean that in a good way. And but if you were curious about having the experience of seeing what kind of rope bottom you could be, which I was curious about, you kind of had to be like, well, I mean, for me, I was like, well, I'm going to figure out how to get paid to have this experience so that it doesn't matter if I'm not attracted to the person. And I can be, I guess, a bit of a mercenary in that way. But like, I like never really like enjoyed it very much. Mm. And then I was like, well, I guess I don't like this that much. Mm. Not that I didn't like bondage, but that I didn't like the more like elaborate suspension bondage. Right. And so then flash forward like a decade or more. And I'm like at queer leather parties in Brooklyn. And all of a sudden, this is fucking babe in what I now know is faux leather. Fucking tying up my friends in these like elaborate, beautiful performances, sort of like live installations. And I was like, huh, maybe I do like this. Or maybe I could like this. Or I realized I had like a bias in my head that like,
yeah,
it was not something that I could experience from someone that I found to be a babe.
Right.
So thank you for your service is what I'm trying to say.
I'm glad to have changed your mind about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you describe the kinds of bondage performances that you do and how you went from like being someone who's into bondage to somebody who does these like performances? And they're not super like high concept, like burlesque performances. They're really more like, I don't know. Yeah. They feel like live installations to me.
That's a nice way to think about it. I think that rope suspension lends itself really nicely to like this bridge between burlesque and scening.
Mm.
So parties, even like vanilla parties or dance parties that are sexy,
yeah,
they will oftentimes want rope bondage performances. It's really great to look at. People that have never seen it before are like, oh my god, this is incredible.
But now I know for sure that I'm at Bondage a Go-Go. Like, yes. Yeah.
Party promoters and stuff who invite me, and I do it like maybe every couple months to do a performance. And because I'm not, like, I don't like to be the center of attention, I don't like to be looked at, I started doing it because my friend, who I was tying up a lot, would be like, oh, I like, somebody wants us to do this thing. And I'm like, okay. But now I'm, like, more comfortable doing that. And it's better for me because I feel like the bottom, whether this is true or not, don't tell me you watch me. Tell me you watch the bottoms that I tie up.
I mean, I'm a switch, so I'm also a switch voyeur. So yeah. I'm watching both. Okay.
Well, it feels like everyone's just watching the bottom and I'm not even there. So that's why I do it. It's fun for me now because I think that a lot of times rope specifically, that's the same as like pole dancing now, can be super desexualized.
Mm,
and
that's a really good comparison.
I'm like not about the respectability in that.
Yo.
I hate it. Rope and bondage, like that is a huge part of my sexuality, and I really don't enjoy like the yoga rope movement that's been taking the world by storm. I'm a sadist, so when I tie people, it's because I want to hurt them, not because I want them to look pretty.
Great.
Yeah. So I try to be true to myself while I'm doing these performances and do something that feels like I would do this scene at home, and I'm just doing it in front of other people now.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it is pretty to look at, but I also enjoy sadism.
Yes. So.
And masochism. Yes. So, yeah. Well, if people listening have not seen Christine's performances, you really gotta check them out. They're very also, I don't know, like I just had Lindsay Dye on the show to talk about cake sitting. Have you seen any of her cake sits?
I have, yeah.
I feel like you guys have something in common in your performances, which is that they're very, like, maybe solemn is the wrong word, somber, not exactly, like, sad, mm-hmm. but they're definitely not, like, razzle-dazzle or, like, upbeat or like, even sort of sassy burlesque. They're both very, almost, like, drone-y.
Yeah. Like a Catholic mass, perhaps?
Oh, good segue. Good segue. Is that what Catholic mass is like? I barely know. I have sort of been to Catholic church. Have I been to mass? What is the difference? I guess this is a good place to
mass
start.
Mass is like the name of the service, basically. Like if you've been to like a Catholic service for like an hour or whatever it is, then you've been to mass.
Okay, I have been to mass.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, that's a great segue. So we're going to talk about why are people into Catholicism / blasphemy. I'll tell you another story. I worked for a time, actually at the same time that I was getting started working as a dominatrix, I worked for an agency that provided at-home caretakers for adults with developmental disabilities. And you basically like needed to like do, you know, you're working for an adult. So if the adult says like, you know, who want to go to the movies, then, you know, you're going to go to the movies. And if the client that you're working for is like, we're going to go to church tomorrow, you know, so I had this experience once where I'm like staying with this woman who actually did not have a cognitive disability. She was merely blind, but needed help around the house. Anyway, so she was blind and like 70. And she was like, cool. And then in the morning, like, I'm going to go to church. And I was like, cool. Does somebody like pick you up for that? And she's like, I'm pretty sure you take me to church. And I was like, oh, shit. Fuck. And like, for those who are listening who don't know, I was not raised religious at all. I am half Jewish and like definitely am very culturally affiliated with my Judaism and like know more about Judaism than other forms of religion, but like I am a lifelong atheist and I actually like grew up in a very Christian small town, so I actually am like triggered by people like trying to convert me, and we can talk about that, but but anyway, so I was like, I just like the idea of going to church, but then I was like, well, I'm getting paid to go to church, I guess it's like sociological experiment. But I also, like, kind of didn't really have a choice.
Right.
And then it ended up being Catholic mass.
Yes.
And it was just, like, so humorous because... And the guy I was dating at the time had been to 13 years of Catholic school. My, did that affect his sexuality.
Oh, yes.
He was very repressed. Uh-huh. I hope you're listening. So I like go home and I'm like telling him about how like, oh yeah, you know, I'm like sitting there and these people turn around and they're like, peace be with you. And I'm like, you too. And I'm like, I don't fucking know what I'm supposed to say. And then because she was blind, my client, I had to like walk her up to take the communion. Eucharist.
Yeah, Eucharist.
Yeah. Most of my knowledge of Catholicism comes from having a literature degree. So I'm like, I know about all the like allegory stuff. Yeah. So I'm like much more likely to say Eucharist than communion. Anyway, so I'm like going up, they like start to give me the thing, the wafer,
right,
the body of Christ,
the body of
yeah,
Christ
as it's being transubstantiated in yes, front of my
you know the me. Words oh my god.
I'm telling you, literature degree. And I'm like, I'm trying to be like, no, like what's going to happen if it transubstantiates?
I haven't been confirmed.
Yeah, right, because you're not supposed to, no. Right? And she, my client is like, it's fine, it's fine. I was like, but I'm not. Like, this is, what's going to, is like hellfire going to like... like emerge from the ground, I guess is where hellfire emerges from, and like strike down this Catholic church. Anyway, so that is my adventures in mass.
Did you take the communion wafer?
Yeah. Yeah. And I drank the wine.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like in a
they actually had wine.
I think it was wine.
Yeah. So a lot of churches will not. That's like for special occasions.
Oh, like maybe it wasn't.
You only get wine like at Christmas Mass.
Oh, well, maybe.
No, like they only do the body of Christ, not the blood.
Oh, maybe I've just told this story and included the blood.
That, I mean, could have happened.
Yeah, I mean, knowing me, I probably just, added a little blood in there.
Right.
Anyway, that's my story. Other than that, I am hopeless. I know nothing about Catholicism. The erotics of Catholicism, I'll just come out and say it, leave me totally cold. I'm not into nuns. I'm not into... did you see Fleabag?
No, not yet.
Okay, there's a very hot priest confession that... I'm not into, like, the guilt stuff, the all the kneeling, the all this
stuff. I'm getting hot, just... just hearing you list all of these things.
You know, fucking yourself with a crucifix. Like, I'm not into any of that. So can you please explain to me, why are people into this crazy shit?
Yeah. Okay, so I have the most people that I know that are into Catholic stuff definitely were raised Catholic.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions is, do you have to be a Reformed Catholic to eroticize Catholicism?
I think that it makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Of course, you can be anyone and eroticize Catholicism or like think nuns are hot. My personal story is that I was raised Catholic.
Okay.
I went to public school and I was always threatened with Catholic school until I was like old enough to understand that my parents couldn't actually afford to send me to Catholic school. But I was an angel child anyway, so I didn't really need the threat.
That's even that is interesting, the idea of like being threatened, the idea of like if you misbehave, you're gonna be sent to this like stricter environment.
Yes. Yeah. It's strict. You have to wear uniforms, which I was like, absolutely not.
Oh, that reminds me of another story.
So we went to Mass every Sunday, and I went to catechism classes on Monday night, which is called CCD, and I don't know what that stands for, but it's like you go and you learn very cherry-picked stories from the New Testament, usually about miracles that Jesus performed.
Okay.
They do not at all tell you about all of the other shit in the Bible that is like not Jesus performing miracles and how he died for our sins.
They don't talk to you about they do talk to you about how he died.
They talk to you about how he died. That's like the thing Catholics are obsessed with.
Yes.
But
I have noticed that.
Yeah, you like will never hear stories from like the Old Testament about like the wrathful God, the vengeful God, the God who likes to kill and, you know, pillage and whatever. So
and like fuck with and like mind fuck people.
Yeah, mind fuck people, tell you have to kill your son,
yeah,
and then
exactly.
Be like, LOL JK, when you're about to do it.
Right.
That was my experience of religion, was like, oh my God, so great. Like Jesus was this dude and he died for us and he did all these miracles and he's amazing.
Do you remember believing that?
I did believe it until I was probably maybe about the time I stopped believing in Santa Claus.
How old were you?
Third, fourth grade?
Yeah.
But I would go to these CCD classes and we'd learn about how Jesus, you know, whatever miracle he did that week. And then my question was always, oh, why don't people do miracles today? Like, how come no one has walked on water in like 2,000 years, you know?
Good question.
More than 2,000 years. So they didn't like me. And then I did end up getting confirmed. My parents decided to stop going to church when, you know, they were realizing that they were extreme hypocrites. And then I became a pretty staunch atheist and kind of like put all of the Catholic stuff away for a while. And then I went to, when I was like first going to kinky parties, sex parties, I went to one that was church themed.
Great.
And
where was that?
It's a party that doesn't happen, but it was called Slut Pile here in Brooklyn.
I remember Slut Pile.
Yeah. It was not, it wasn't that long ago. I didn't go to parties for a long time, so I like started going to parties, and this one was church themed, and they like built a confessional in the apartment that it was being hosted in.
Classic.
Yeah. So I wanted to take, I wanted someone to confess to me.
Yeah.
But I met a femtop who was toppier than I was. So I ended up confessing to her. And it was transformative.
Wow.
And I was like, this is so hot. I've never felt this way about like role playing or like pretending to do something in a scene, as like this just awoken something in me.
Cool.
Yeah.
What was your confession?
So there's there, and part of what makes it fun and interesting for me is that everything has like a ritual to it.
Sure.
Which is, you know, I feel like there's a lot of similarities between leather as a whole and Catholicism.
Okay.
And the ritual is one of them. So, you know, if you go into confession, you have to recite, there's a prayer, and then you have to say certain things, and like, it's been 4 months since my last confession, and there's a thing you have to go through.
Yeah.
So we like looked it up online and like did that. And I think, you know, I wanted to make it dirty, so I was like, I've been having impure thoughts about my priest. And, you know, it was about her, and she was like, oh, well, tell me more. and then told me that I had to say a bunch of prayers, or I forget what it was. But yeah, that was kind of my introduction. That was maybe 3 years ago. Introduction into, like, the world of this kink for me. And it's been quite the journey.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.